Sam Amick, our good friend from the USA Today, joins us every Friday during the basketball season, and the basketball season is officially underway. Joins us here on the Afternoon Delight. He was at Staples Center last night for the Clippers and Lakers, and Lonzo made just one basket, Sam. He was 1 for 6. Rebounded the ball pretty well. He had 4 assists in the game and a couple of turns and just scored 3 points. So you watched it up close. What was your impressions of Lonzo Ball's NBA debut last night, Sammy?
Yeah, guys, it was rough. It was really rough. I don't know what, you know, category I would put it in with other rookie debut failings, you know, but it kind of brought home to me just how tough the context is going to be for Lonzo in Lakerland. You know what I mean? You got, not only are you, you know, probably the most hyped rookie of all time because of everything with his dad and what he's trying to accomplish with him and his sons, but, you know, it's the Lakers. On top of that, Magic Johnson is now running the team. And so, you know, you have the context of people bringing up Magic's rookie debut in 1979 when he scored 26 points and brought a great story. I wrote a couple stories last night. I just filed a third little mini column looking at just LeVar and the fact that last night, you know, he was quiet for most of the night, and then he ended up doing a lot of media, and this is the kind of stuff that fires up players like Pat Beverly, and that's what Lonzo is going to see all year long. It was, you know, it was something else to see. Pat was in his head. Pat was in his grill, like you said, Pop, and it was pretty ugly.
Yeah, I didn't like Lonzo's body language.
Right.
At one point where Beverly just got right in his grill. And I don't know, was his ankle bothering him, Sam? I know he missed, the last 4 preseason games with the sprained ankle. I didn't see, you know, the movement skill. They were trying to create switches and get Beverly off of him, and he looked like he wasn't running well. When you were watching it up close, was he at all limited by the ankle?
I thought he looked fine. No, I mean, it certainly was an issue. It cost him games in the preseason. He said afterwards, like, it's one thing if a guy says, I'm fine, meaning don't talk about it. This was more like, he sounded like he legitimately said he felt fine. I just think that he didn't know how to handle that kind of a presence. And there's not many guys in the league who do. You mentioned Steph. I mean, 2-time MVP at different times gets flustered by Pat Beverly. That's how good he is. But, you know, the other thing that the Lakers are going to have to deal with going forward is that when a guy bullies a player like that, I don't care about the hype or, you know, however you want to explain it. Like Charles Oakley, you know, the ultimate enforcer in NBA history, tweeted something this morning about, you know, how did nobody come to Lonzo's defense? Because it wasn't just playing good defense. It was embarrassing a guy and just picking on him, and nobody responded. And that's where these Lakers are going to just get eaten alive all year long. It's a bunch of young guys. I don't know if that's Brook Lopez, you know, as a vet, who's going to have to step in and come to his defense. But, you know, he's going to be facing this every time out.
Or maybe Andrew Bogut. And I want to get your thoughts on Bogut.
Yeah, there you go.
66 in gold last night. It was kind of weird. Sam Amick, USA Today, NBA writer, joining us on the Afternoon Delight with Pop and Vonta here at 95.7 The Game. He was at Staples last night for the first NBA game of Lonzo Ball, and it was awful. 3 points. He was a minus 14 when he was on the floor, 1 of 6 from the floor. You know, we can say that Pat Beverly is just a junkyard dog, and he's maybe the best on-ball defensive guard. There are a lot of them, but certainly he's a good one. And it's just going to be a one-game deal. But or do you think, Sam, there's a gigantic bullseye on Lonzo's back because his dad mouths off so much? And NBA players, I'm sure they're thinking, who the hell is this guy? And you need your father to talk for you so much? Is he going to get this more than the average rookie because of how much his dad just spouts off?
Yeah, 100%. And that's where I was surprised last night. You know, I mean, for one, Pat Beverly had a quote that's going to stick in my head for the whole season in relation to Lonzo. And he was talking to a couple of us after the big group went away. Mark Spears from ESPN was there and a couple other guys. And he said, much is given, much is required. That was Pat's way of explaining his treatment of Lonzo and the idea that NBA players don't like the prospect of young guys getting too much shine too early. And they're very cognizant of it. You see it all over the place. When Kawhi Leonard blew up and he was getting talked about as an MVP candidate, you would hear, you know, players around the league talk about, too much too soon. Same thing right now with with Giannis, Antetokounmpo, with, you know, some players, they don't like it when the hype comes before, you know, the guy proving himself. And so follow that up with the fact that for the first half last night, this is kind of the story that I just filed breaking this down, is the first half, LeVar didn't do any media. He wasn't on the Jumbotron. He wasn't anywhere to be found. You know, I was hearing that he was up in the suite watching the game with his family, and I thought maybe he would stay out of the public fray. And then next thing you know, he granted, to my knowledge, at least three interviews to ESPN. I'll be honest with you. I saw him on the floor, and as a media guy, you're tempted to catch him and talk to him because he's a hell of a quote. And, I mean, I'm not saying I'm never going to quote the man, but last night, you know, I kind of just showed, you know what, I'm not going to talk to Pat Beverly's dad. Like, what, you know, that's the whole weirdness of LeVar, is that he's part of the story all the time, and he probably shouldn't be, but, you know, he was out there again last night, and that's the stuff that is not going to help Lonzo's case, again, because these players, you know, they see the social media stuff, they see, you know, all the shine coming Lonzo's way, and they want to kill him on the court because of it.
Sam, you're around these players a lot, and you heard Patrick Beverley's comments yesterday after the game. He seemed like he had an extra gear just due to LeVar Ball talking so much. Do you get that sense from the rest of the league? I know you're around these players a lot, and what are they whispering about Lonzo Ball? Because it seems like LeVar Ball is trying to cash checks that his son just can't cash right now.
Shout out Top Gun, Vontae. Nicely done there. Yeah, no, I agree. Here's a little anecdote that comes to mind, I think is fair game to share. When LeVar, I remember when he said that Lonzo was better than Steph Curry, and then he said it a second time, which was obviously insane. I was at Staples Center, ironically, that night, and I think it was a Lakers game, maybe Clippers, but they were playing Charlotte, whoever it was. And so Del Curry was in town. He was in L.A. And I caught Del in the media room, said hello, and I said, I probably know the answer to this, but any chance you feel like weighing in on what LeVar had to say? I just grinned, and he says, no. He goes, let's just wait till the kid gets to the NBA. And, like, that was, you know, that stuck in my head, just that idea that from Del Curry to Pat Beverly to everybody else in the league, I think that was the sense, like, you know, like you said, Vontae, the checks got written, and at some point they're either going to bounce or they're going to get cashed. And there's a long view. I mean, Lonzo could turn it into a great player, and I think it's fair to him to take the long view. But right now, I feel like he's going to have some big time growing pain.
Yeah, Del Curry has slightly different parenting skills than the big ball of brand, LeVar
right,
Ball.
Exactly.
So it is interesting. But to compare him to Steph, and, you know, Sam Amick is joining us from the USA Today, NBA beat writer for the USA Today, and he was at Staples last night for Lonzo's NBA debut, and it was awful. I mean, just he got really taken out of the game, I think, mentally. But I want to ask you about his jump shot, because I haven't seen him in person. Bonta, you saw him play in the NCAA tournament in SAC. He didn't shoot the ball well last night. He was 1-for-6. He was 0-for-2 from the line. And I think he is a good shooter from what I've seen from the summer league, but it's just so funky where it's out in front. He does it so fast, I can't quite get a look at what that shot is. When you watch it in person, what do you see? Will he have a problem squeezing that off against tight defenders coming off his screen? And just what do you see from the ball coming out of his hand, Sam?
I mean, it's funky is the word you put on it. I had a funny moment when I was with the Warriors in China. Remember Kevin Martin and the funny shot that he had?
Oh, yeah.
For all those years?
Oh, yeah, Kmart. Oh,
yeah. So Kevin was in China with doing some stuff with the NBA, and I had tweeted about Kevin's presence, and this one fan said, hey, you should ask him what he thinks of Lonzo's jumper. And he was right there. I thought I'd have some fun with it, and I had asked Kevin, and he smiled and laughed. He's like, I love it. Don't change a thing, you know, And so, you know, in the wake of that, I was kind of looking forward to looking at Lonzo more closely, seeing what I thought. And, Pop, to your question, you know, I don't see a huge problem with release time. You know, I feel like, you know, it looks good. I mean, not good might not be the right word, but, you know, he's got a jumper. And in warm-ups, he was working with Brian Shaw, doing some step-back stuff on the post, you know, working his way around the perimeter, and he was stroking it. He looked good. I think come game time, the yips and the jitters were the story last night. He missed two layups that were point blank. The free throws were ugly. That was the stuff that kind of got his night off the rails. Because to be totally honest and to be fair, like, there was a time, and there were moments when he looked at him and said, you can certainly see the skill, the way he pushes the tempo. I mean, the way his outlet passes have more zip on them than most point guards in the NBA, and that part was impressive. He had one long pass to Brooke Lopez in traffic that was, I mean, it was like the, you know, Tom Brady finding a wideout with the perfect kind of touch. So that's his game. That's what he does. The scoring is not always going to be the highlight, and there's going to be a lot of single-digit scoring nights. If his guys converted a little bit more, that 9 rebounds, 4 assists easily could have been 8 or 9 assists, and then maybe some of the sting is taken off of this brutal debut. So there was, you know, a couple of silver linings here and there. And the jumper, you know, we'll see over time how that looks.
Sam Amick now working for the USA Today, one of their top NBA writers. You mentioned the time you were in Sacramento with Kmart, Kevin Martin. How many years were you in Sac when Big Cuz, DeMarcus Cousins, was there, Sammy?
What year? What was his rookie year?
'09
Yeah.
The same year as John Wall.
Yeah.
So I never covered, it's funny, I never covered, I think this is accurate, I don't think I covered DeMarcus on a daily basis as the beat writer. I was there for AOL, you know, I was working at AOL Fan House as a national guy. But I mean, you know, I was the beat writer from 2005 to 2010, you know, and then was just around a lot, you know, in the years that followed.
2010 was when he was drafted.
So 2010.
Yeah, 2010.
All right, so, but
right.
You've obviously observed him, you know, being up there and being around it. You know his deal. And the reason I bring it up, the Warriors are playing New Orleans tonight. And I'm watching Cousins play Wednesday night in Memphis, and he gets into it with a fan at the end of the game. And I think the fan crossed the line. I think they got him kicked out. But he winds up taking a technical. What did he take last year? 18, I think it was. Two more than you're allowed. And I just give me the whole DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis. They made the trade to get him last year, and I think Dell Demps is on the hot seat. Alvin Gentry is on the hot seat there. In a league where you're downsizing, I don't know why you want to play with two bigs on the floor simultaneously, as skilled as they are. And Cousins does have, this is the last year of his contract, so how do you think this plays out between the brow and the boogie? Do they wind up staying together long term? Should they? How does this play out, Sam?
I mean, so basketball wise, they had some good moments late last year. Remember, they got off to a really rough start, and essentially after the trade, after all the hype that the Pelicans were going to play their way into the playoffs, it was like, all right, they were out of the playoff race real quick with the, you know, because they didn't get off on the right foot together. But then late, there were some good moments. They played good basketball. I don't know how it turns out. If I'm handicapping it, you know, I don't think, you know, we're going to see those guys there for the long term. And then the tough part for Pelicans fans and people in New Orleans is that what you end up hearing a lot these days around the league is that you talk about high stakes. It goes well beyond Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry. It goes all the way to sorry, guys, having traffic issues here. It goes all the way to the franchise itself and the fact that it has always been really hard for them to make money in that market, and they need this team to succeed. They can't afford to – they went all in with DeMarcus with the interest of keeping Anthony Davis, and the prospect of potentially losing both those guys eventually would just be devastating. And like you also said, Pop, stylistically, they're going against the grain right now. And not only that, I mean, at least if they were in the Eastern Conference, which geographically they should be, then they'd have a puncher's chance. I mean, you could have a halfway decent year and have it work reasonably well this season and still either barely make the playoffs or not make them at all in the West.
Yeah, Sam, I think Dell Demps should be on a hot seat for the way he's constructed this team around Boogie and Anthony Davis. Now, I would think, hypothetically, you'd want three-point shooters, and I know Drew Holiday is okay, but really surround the pieces around these two guys, it doesn't look like it's enough to compete in the Western Conference here.
Yeah, and then that Rajon Rondo injury didn't help. You know, they had limited means going into the summer. They had to overpay Drew because essentially the way the point guard market fell was that they either had to overpay Drew or they had about $10 million or about $12 million to give to somebody else. And in today's day and age, when you're trying to get a top level point guard around guys like Davis and Cousins, $12 million doesn't go that far, as crazy as that sounds. So you're right. I mean, Dell is one of those guys, and I like him a lot personally, but, you know, there's plenty of people around the league who are, you know, surprised that he still has the job. It normally, you know, that kind of length and that kind of underwhelming result is going to get you fired, and that hadn't happened yet. So tough situation, and something else, Pop, that you had referenced and that I do think is, like, always worth monitoring is his cousins and his kind of demeanor and the way he carries himself. And forget about, like, the debate about antics. Just I think in terms of having a winning culture and having the kind of vibe that that the Warriors have done such a good job at, and the joy of the game, things like that, and, you know, it has not led to winning basketball in DeMarcus's career. He's never been in the playoffs, and this is a huge year for him on that front.
And Anthony Davis and the Pelicans, you know, played the Warriors in a 1-8 matchup a couple of years ago, and they won 41 games. And since Alvin Gentry's been there, it's just been a disaster. It was Sam Amick joining us from the USA Today, their distinguished NBA beat writer. The Warriors are in New Orleans tonight to take on the Pelicans. And to Tabonte's point, the other night, Davis and Cousins combined for 61 points. The whole team scores 91 points. So the other guys got 30, yes. And they only had 15 assists in the game. And I think they had 7 or 8 in the first quarter. So you bring in Alvin Gentry, Del Day. We like Del. Del's been on the show. He's a former Warrior, and he grew up in the East Bay. He's a good guy. But you bring in Alvin Gentry to supposedly play, you know, the Warrior style. He's the one who brought it, you know, pace and space and open the floor and let's run. And then you have two bigs. And I know Cousins has lost 20 pounds, Sam, but I just, even if Cousins says, I want to come back, can you win in the NBA with two bigs on the floor simultaneously? I don't care how good they are. Are they going to be able to get up and down? And the unibrow can run, but can you play the way Gentry wants to play offensively with two bigs on the floor simultaneously?
No, I mean, the qualifier you threw on the end there is the key. You can't the way that Alvin wants to play, not even close. And that's the way that a lot of teams want to play these days. If you break down, you know, Synergy is the company, the program that does some pretty amazing stuff that quantifies every player's action on the floor throughout the course of the season and, you know, and can track these guys, right? So DeMarcus is last year was the slowest player in the NBA in terms of, you know, just carries his real estate covered and speed and all those things. You know, the folks at Team USA could tell you about that because they had to work so hard to get him to run the floor, you know, during his time with them. And that is something that has kind of dogged him through his whole career. I mean, listen, he's a big man. He lost some weight this summer, like you said, and that's probably going to help. But you know, again, stylistically, going against the grain and trying to do something that even the ceiling for how good it could be, you know, even the best case scenario, I think, is still, it's got you at a major, major disadvantage in the context of the West, in the context of the Warriors. So it becomes a case of the Pelicans kind of privately hoping that they can get into the playoffs and make some cash and, you know, not actually pursuing a championship because with the formula they have right now, I think they, you know, internally, I'm sure they realize that, you know, that's just not tenable. That's not something they could actually try to execute.
Yeah, it's year three for Alvin Gentry, and it's just not working there. And I think we'll see how they need to get off to a good start. And they've already lost their opener, and they have a hard time checking Steph Curry. Let's see how they do tonight. Sam Amick from the USA Today, our guest. So you were in L.A. last night. You got the weekend off. What's your next NBA assignment, Sammy?
Well, the weekend off part is where my focus is at the moment.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I know, yeah, Sam we'll wasn't see. Even wearing a suit the other night. Pop, you should have seen him. He was in a hoodie and some sweatpants.
Yeah, I took some flack for that. And then, I took a lot of flack for that. I saw our old friend, Roz Goldon Wooday, the other day, and she was giving me grief about the casual attire. I'm not sure where I'm going next. I'm going to be on the home front. Seeing what the Kings are doing. I know they're on the road right now, seeing what's next. You know, it's been a productive month. I did China. I did Oklahoma City. I went back to D.C. for some meetings with our people. And so I feel like this has been playoff-level travel, you know, and we just got into the regular season. So time to get home and see the wife and kids for a little bit.
And sleep after China. How's your body? Yeah. I know Steve Kerr, when they landed last night in New Orleans, he had them go work out and try to, you know, get them to work out, then go right to bed to try to, they got, it's 2-hour time change, and the game is late tonight. So they're trying to adjust. How have you adjusted from a 15-hour flight and a 15-hour time change?
I'm good now. I mean, I think it probably took me 4 or 5 days until you felt like yourself. The first couple of days were crazy because the first night, the way the timing worked when we landed, you kind of slept a little bit on the plane and then you needed more sleep. So, you know, we landed kind of going into the evening and that helped. And then, so it didn't really punch me in the face until the second day when I went to bed like a ton of bricks at 10 p.m. And then I woke up at 2 in the morning and it was like, that's a wrap. You're up for the day. And I looked at social media and Clay Thompson's tweeting and Zaza's tweeting, and that made me feel a little bit better because we were all in the same boat. But it's not a small deal, man. It's my first time dealing with it. Steph, I talked to him after, like maybe a week after the team got back, and I remember he told me something that stuck in my head that he said that the Sunday through Tuesday practices that they had, he called them, he said they were the three worst days of practice that he can ever remember his whole career. Ron Adams talked about the guys walking around like zombies. So I don't blame those guys at all for being a little bit irritated with the scheduling aspect of the China trip. I think the NBA has got to figure that out going forward.
All right, Sam. Sleep up. Maybe we'll see you next Wednesday when the Warriors come back home to take on the Toronto Raptors over at Oracle. Have a good weekend. Get to catch up on your sleep.
Sounds good, boys. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.